Did you play Army when you were a kid a lot?
I'm hovering. That's I'm right. hovering over the battlefield now. Or I'm about to give a traffic report. It could go either way. It's let's go. Let's dive in. It's Tuesday, November 15th. Tuesday, November 15th.
Yeah. A day that Episode. Will live in infamy.
The day that will live in infamy.
It is episode 238 of On Taking Pictures. Your weekly red light of photography goodness.
I prefer to think of it as a lighthouse.
A beacon.
Of truth and meaning.
Yeah. A beacon. Right. We are your north.
In the fog of earth. The fog of reality.
In the mire of other photography, lesser photography podcasts.
Oh, lesser. I like that.
Ouch.
I'm fired up, Bill. I'm fired up.
Fired up. Ready to go.
So let's see. Something happened since we did the last show. We got a truck.
Oh, you got a truck. What'd you get a truck for?
What
are you doing with a truck?
Something big. Well, it's not really a truck. We call it a truck. It's an Xterra.
That is a Nissan.
Nissan Xterra. Yeah, it's big. It's black. It's beautiful. It's like rough and tumble. It's nice being up higher.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, love it. But there was something else that happened since we last spoke, and I can't for the life of me think about what it was. Oh, right, the world went. That's what it was.
Wait, what happened again?
Hey, I don't want to talk about it too much because, hey, for 25% of the people that voted, they got what they wanted. For 25% of the people that voted, they didn't get what they wanted. And the 50% that stayed home, who knows what they wanted.
They can suck it.
Well, okay.
Compulsory voting.
I will say that for a few days, I was in shock. Again, not that Trump won. I don't have I watched The Apprentice. I watched Celebrity Apprentice. You know,
you're part of the problem, Jeffrey.
As an entertainer, I have no problem. Sure. But the guy who decides whose hot dog cart is better between Bret Michaels and Omarosa, probably not the best choice.
The answer was Bret Michaels, right?
I think it was, yeah.
Okay, good.
And again, as I said last week, my concern is the legitimizing of the anger and the sort of hate speak that's come up around it.
Sure.
And, you know, as I said last week, and I mean this, I don't really care who you voted for. I don't care if you're a Trump fan. I don't care if you're a Hillary fan. What I care about is being good people. And we've seen a dramatic rise in rhetoric on the streets. There was a church down the street that had, you know, swastikas painted on it and, you know, welcome to Trump Nation or something. And
in your neighborhood?
In Silver Spring. Yeah.
Wow.
And yeah, I just...
A friend of ours had, a black friend of ours had a bottle thrown at her at a bar the other night.
Yeah. Well, there was a in Brooklyn, I don't know if you heard about this. Guy was in this restaurant in Brooklyn, had his meal, apparently overheard some people talking, and this particular woman, Hillary supporter, paid his bill, left the restaurant, came back in, and punched her square in the face.
Wow. It's a crazy world we live in. I hope civility, you know, wins. Somehow.
I do too. So again, we don't want to talk about it.
No, but you much, know, but can I get unpolitical about the whole thing?
Yeah, please. Okay, please. So I put some notes in that you may or may not want to touch on. I don't know.
I'm looking at them. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
It got this week got me thinking a lot about failure and fear of failure, and the reason why we do or do not do things in life. Look, I make no bones about who I was supporting in this, and I'm very concerned about the direction of our country and blah, 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 blah. But, and so in the last week, say Wednesday, I actually, we woke up and Conrad was there and she was like getting ready for work. And I said, you know what? Can you take the day off? Because I can't, I don't think I could be here alone. I'm kind of frazzled, you know? Mm-hmm. So she took the day off and we did stuff together and we spent a few days. And, you know, there's this despondent feeling when what you thought was going to happen or what you hoped would happen doesn't happen, right? And you have this, and this goes for this election, but it also goes for you try really hard to, I don't know, get into a certain school or, you know, get a job.
Get a particular job. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Or any one of our creative projects that you or yeah, I or any of our
finish a body
do.
Of work. Yeah,
right.
Sure.
Yeah. Or you finish it and it falls flat. You know, you finish the movie and no one likes it. Right. And I think it's that feeling, the feeling that I had last week that maybe you had last week that a lot of people may have had last week or this week. I feel like this feeling is what keeps a lot of people from doing it in the first place, right? Because it's the fear of this. This is the downside of trying and not getting it, right? Is this disgusting feeling, right?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. I feel like the other side of the coin is or the other end of the spectrum rather is the guy who doesn't want to do anything because he's so scared, so paralyzed by the fear of the feeling that we're feeling right now that you don't do anything, right? You know, that's sort of the end. And where those two feelings meet, the sort of despondency about wanting to do something but being scared about it, and then the actual fear of being scared, like where those things meet in the middle is how far from one side to the other the tug of war happens, where the fear of failure gets beat by the fear of just not doing anything, you know, that feeling of, my God, I just need to, I don't care if it works. I don't care if it doesn't work. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to, you know, get my hands doing something.
Right.
And I think that place where the sparks are in the middle is the place that's interesting. And the place that I think you and I and a lot of our listeners tug at in the center. And,
yeah.
But I guess my point in this is that, yeah, this is the downside, right? This is the part where you kind of feel sick because you failed kind of feeling. And, but you know what, the whole sun will come up tomorrow kind of thing. It's like, well, yeah, it feels really crappy. Didn't kill us. Didn't kill me. Well, not yet. But you know, like right. I'm still here. There's an element of that fear, that pain is scary, and that's what keeps you from doing it. But it's not fleeting. But what's the word I'm looking for? It's survivable. You know.
Yeah. I mean. Yes. By and large, it is survivable. But we are also speaking from behind the curtain of white privilege.
Oh, absolutely.
And
by the way, you as know, you said that, there was a huge thunderclap outside, like in a movie.
Oh, I wish I could have heard that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like that. No, absolutely. Yeah.
I have friends that I'm genuinely concerned for.
Oh, no.
How many people who listen?
I'm far more concerned about a lot of my friends than I am about me. I meant from more of the creative point of view, survival. But yes, I mean, the election is the election, you know.
I wrote something, and I won't share the whole thing because I don't really know what to do with it. But one of the sentences in it is I'm worried about many things under this new regime, not the least of which is the value of art and beauty to an incoming administration who campaigned and won on a platform of hate and fear. I hope that I'm wrong, but I see the future, what a friend of mine calls the darkest timeline, not as a place of hope, but a place where people are at best marginalized and at worst victims of violence, either by words or deeds, simply because they are different. And I think for us, for the people listening, most hopefully of you listening to this show, now is when art matters the most. Now is when beauty matters the most. Now is when intent and purpose are at their most fragile, but simultaneously at their most valuable.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you want to talk about art in ages of upheaval and pain, you could argue the largest advances in art happened in those sorts of times.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I think that this is the next 4 years, maybe the closest thing to the 1960s that you or I will ever experience.
Probably. Probably. Yeah.
It, you know, and I mean, can you go back to the second sentence, go back to the beginning of what you just read? Can you read the beginning one more time? There's something I thought that I wanted to pull out.
I'm worried about many things under this new regime, not the least of which is the value of art and beauty to an incoming administration who campaigned and won on a platform of hate and fear.
Okay, yeah. Do you think that art is inherently good and beautiful? That there isn't art that's based upon hate and fear?
No, absolutely not. I do believe that art, a great number of pieces of art that I am most fond of came out of really dark places. Some of my favorite music has come out of really dark places on behalf of the people who wrote those songs. But I think art can also be a beacon. It can change minds. It can change hearts. It can inspire new thinking. It can inspire movements. I think photography can do that as well.
Yeah. But I think despite all of the effort put towards, goals that would stifle art, I think art is in many ways unstiflable.
Yeah. I don't see art as going away. I don't, believe me, that's not what I'm trying to say at all. I'm saying in a larger sense, and maybe that shouldn't have been art. Maybe the value should be around self-expression, because we're already seeing the beginnings of challenges to the First Amendment in this country.
Sure. Yeah, that stuff is actually terrifying.
And now is I think when we need to be at our most critical, our most observant.
Of ourselves or of other people?
I think of people and policies that would change or undermine some of the fabric of this country, some of the Constitution, some of the Bill of Rights, that's what frightens me. That's what concerns me. Maybe not. Yeah. I'm not frightened yet, but I am concerned.
You know, there was I was listening to an interview with let's just say a supporter of the political left in this country yesterday. And she was of a racial minority. And in the middle of her talking about the Trump winning, she said something along the lines of, this happened because of those people or something like that. Some sort of phrase like those people or these people or something like that. And I thought, it's not any better that you use that to discuss the people you don't like as the people discussing you like that, you know?
Right.
There was like this pang of, oh no, that's the wrong move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The finger pointing.
Yeah. And look, there are just as many people in this country that agree with you as there were 2 weeks ago.
Sure.
If not, there are just as many that disagree. Right.
Sure.
So it's not like suddenly the country is awash with danger necessarily.
No.
Right?
No.
But there's a lot of people who play with that kind of rhetoric. But a major shift has happened in this country as if you swapped out half the population, which is not what happened at all. Those people are always there, you know.
Right. This is the time for those squeaky wheels to get their grease.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it will shift and another group of squeaky wheels will get their grease. Yep. I guess the point I am circling is I could be and was really upset about it, and I could continue to be that. But, I mean, the truth of the matter is that this climate in this country is absolute fuel or fodder, depending on your point of view, for the type of art that I make.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
This is, you know, I can look anywhere and get inspired to say something. Now, what I don't want to get stuck into is being a voice of criticism. I want to let I don't want to become a political artist. And a lot of the stuff that I have made is, yes, it's political.
Tinge to it, yeah.
It's political in nature, but I don't think it's overt. I think it still can be. Many of the pieces are ambiguous enough to be embraced by both sides.
Yes, I think you make political art, but I don't necessarily, by looking at it, know what position you're taking with it.
Right. And I think that's,
you
if
do
I
that,
can
you
continue
do that, on purpose?
That. Yes.
Okay.
I know what I want to say, but I also don't want to just beat you over the head with it and go, well, this is what I'm saying. Because sure. I think that's, to get into our, you know, as kind of foreshadowing for our discussion about street photography, I think the ambiguity and the depth of a piece, whatever it might be, is part of what makes it interesting.
Basically, the fact that you don't really know what it means makes it interesting.
Yeah, I think that's part of it for me. It's one of the reasons I think Gregory Crudson is such a terrific photographer, because I don't know what's in his head. I know what I take away from it and what I think is going on. But in talking to him, we've talked about a couple pieces, and I was completely off the mark on what I thought was going on, you know? And I love that. And the fact that he doesn't explain what's going on, and it leaves room for an audience to project some of their own experiences,
sure,
their own thoughts, their own emotions into it. I think that's one of the hallmarks of great work. I mean, how many, we were talking about Sting before the show, and there was an interview
and
where Sting was
sex. What?
No, that's
go ahead.
You're incorrigible. In an interview, Sting was talking about the fact that so many people use Every Breath You Take as their wedding song.
Right.
And he was just like, good luck with that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
Because
have you listened
not,
to the lyrics? This is
that's
not where
not
I was
what
going.
It means.
Yeah.
You know? But it's this monster of a song for a long time. It was, you know, huge selling song, blah, blah, blah. And I think that's part of what makes art compelling or interesting or lasting, is that it is sort of out of time with, or it can be interpreted as out of time with its own meaning.
Yeah. I think that part of the lesson of the last week for me is this idea that I can't singularly change the world. I can just be the best person, the best version of me that I can be. Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fake Gandhi quote, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. It's like, okay, well, I need to do, I mean, both political stuff, both supporting the causes that I care about, but also making the work that I think will add to the human condition, rather than either not making it at all or doing stuff that I don't care that much about, you know?
Sure.
It's like we only have one life here, guys. You know, there is no redo. You know,
yeah.
You don't pass go collect $200 and go around again. So,
yeah, if you love what has happened, then let that be, you know, your
yeah,
guiding light, if you will. And yep. If you don't, then, you know, I've talked to a couple people that are like, you know what, this has inspired me to get involved. And I won't say on what side or the other, because I know people on both sides,
right,
who are both pleased and displeased with what happened. But if this is what it takes, sometimes it takes some sort of cathartic event for us to get up and stop being armchair quarterbacks.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And if this is that thing that gets you to pen that great novel, or start a new body of work photographically, or a new body of paintings, or write poetry, or get involved with your local municipality, whatever that takes, I do think this can be channeled into something positive, into something good, into something interesting.
Yep.
rather than focusing on whether your team did or didn't win.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be an interesting few years. That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting few weeks, actually. It's pretty fascinating already, but I can't, it's like, I've been going back and forth of whether or not I want to actually read the news. Cause you know, nothing has actually happened yet. So it's sort of a matter of, all right, I don't want to hear about intrigue and cast, you know, it's like that makes no difference to my life. Wait till, you know,
I'm a little bummed out at a couple of the staff choices. I'm a lot sure. bummed out at some
you know,
of the staff
the
choices.
Only thing you can do is support good media too, you know, get sure. a subscription to the Post or the Times or, you know, something.
Yeah.
Some
there's a journalistic, John Oliver in the latest
sure.
last week yeah. tonight, the latest one. Maybe we can add that.
I will do it.
Because there he lists off, you know, if you want to get involved one way or another, here are some places that you can get involved.
Yep.
So anyway, see, that wasn't too bad, right?
No, I think that was delightful.
we shouldn't get nasty emails from that.
Only a right? couple. Two or three. Two or three.
Two or three. Right.
Cool.
Hey, I forgot to mention at the top of the show, and maybe we can you can mention if you still have anything left. I've got a Rode NTG 4 Plus shotgun mic that okay. I'm selling. If okay. anybody's interested, either shoot me an email if you've got my email. If not, podcast it on takingpictures.com. And I think you still have some gear left
yeah,
over.
Yeah, I've sold my 100 macro, the 85, the 50.
So what do you have left? I don't care about what you sold.
I have the 51. I have the 35-1.4. I have a 50-1.4. I have a 28-1.8, and I have my
and these
body.
Are all Canon L lenses.
Well, the 35 is the 50 and the 28 aren't, but they're okay. you know the good the good professional ones. They're just not the L ones. Mm-hmm. And then what is the other thing? Oh, I have a 24-105, which I should probably sell too. So I have some stuff left. But I'm in the process. Like I've got some bites on. I just haven't been super active in trying to sell it. So
okay.
I need to finish that up. Hey, can I? Yeah. So if you're interested, email us.
Yep.
Can I say that I had this crazy, the power of the OTP world yesterday came out for
yeah.
me. It was pretty
yeah.
cool. So this weekend I had to go to run to DC on the train, family members in the hospital. And I get down there and, you know, I'm there for a day and a half and I'm there this afternoon. And I had a shoot this Thursday in New York for a magazine. And I get an email from the guy saying, hey, it turns out I'm not actually coming to New York on Thursday. Sorry, I have to cancel the shoot. Maybe we could do it a couple weeks later, but the magazine needed them sooner. And he's from DC. And I said, well,
oh, so he called you, the magazine didn't call you.
No. Yeah. He wrote and said, hey,
okay,
this
okay.
is, you know, I can't do it on Thursday. And I said, oh,
right.
You know,
okay.
he CC'd the magazine too. And I was like, well, it just so happens that I'm in DC. So if you're actually in DC, maybe we can meet up. The problem is I don't have a camera.
right.
So, cause I left in really short, really short notice. And, so I get down here and this is like noon and this guy's coming in for a meeting between 1 and 2 in town. So I have 2 hours to find a camera and possibly meet up with him and take the pictures in DC. And so I put a call out on Twitter and a couple of people wrote me, including, Arizona Ron, Temi, who came in, met up with me, let me use his camera for 15 minutes and then Dropboxed me the pictures last night.
Nice.
And I just wanted to say thank you to
good one, Ron.
Him and everybody else. So Temi hooked us up. So it was pretty cool. I like yep. I like the idea that
it's a good group, man.
It is
it's
a really good group. So I both saved the day, and other people saved my day. So it was a good day.
I wish you could have come down for the Watson lecture, the talk.
Yeah, I've seen him speak before. He puts on a good show.
He's a terrific guy. He seems really interesting.
Do you think that his lack of sight in one eye actually makes him a better photographer? Because he
no.
sees the world two-dimensionally anyway?
No. I think the guy just is I think two things. I think one, he's got a terrific vision. But number two, he absolutely loves photography.
Sure.
You know, and I think that's, if you look at, from what I know, okay, based on my learning, research, et cetera, the people that really love what they do, that really love photography, are the ones that are really amazing. You know, those are the ones that we keep pointing to.
Sure.
Right?
Yep.
Because they've got to put in the time. And Watson was just charming. I mean, he told great stories. He told the great story about the shot with Hitchcock.
Yep.
With the goose. And how Hitchcock, after the shoot, said, "You look like you could use a cup of tea and a biscuit." And invited him back to his private office. And there he spent 20 minutes or so, you know, having a cup of tea, talking about film with Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah. You know, a lot of amazing. The sort of quote unquote old timers, right, who have been around for a long time, especially the old timers who have been constantly working. And I think this is in a lot of businesses are generally fairly well spoken just because, you know, they've spoken a lot. They've told, they have a lot of stories, you know, that are really fun to listen to. They're polished people. It's like when you see good actors go do interviews with Charlie Rose or whoever, and you go, man, that guy's well-spoken. Right. And mostly he's well-spoken because he does that all the time as part of his job, you know?
Right.
And I think Albert Watts is definitely one of those guys who it's like great musicians who the musicians you see who, you know, are touring a lot where they don't take a lot of time between tunes. They're not tuning all the time. Everything is just like, all right, one, two, three. And then we're going to the next one, you know? Right. I like people like that. It's like all tight and yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, it was one of the things that he said.
Did they put
over...
those on video at all?
What, the talks?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Is it available? I'll find it.
Yeah, find it. Albert Watson, look up S-A-A-M. But yeah, they record them all. One of the things that he kept coming back to that I think is applicable to all of us, really, is... you've got to always be switched on. He kept using that phrase. You've got to be switched on. You've got to be switched on.
What does switched on mean to him?
And what he meant by it, because he explained it, is you've got to always be looking. He talked about and showed several examples of shots that were captured between shots. That there was one setup, and then he was either resetting the set, rewinding the set to do it again, and happened to catch... you know, look up while he was changing film or whatever and catch this moment. And that became the shot.
Yeah.
Or the shots just sort of took on a life of their own apart from what he was originally there to do. Case in point, that terrific shot of Jagger with the leopard.
The double exposure.
Right, the double exposure. Yep. So the story behind that, very quickly, is he had this idea to shoot Mick Jagger in the front seat of a Corvette with a leopard sitting next to him. And he's like, so that was, you know.
Of course, that as was, we all do.
Honestly. Yeah, so they flew him out to L.A. and they set up the shot. And apparently the cat took a swipe at Jagger. And so, you know, everybody freaked out, understandably. And so they had to build a partition because they still wanted to get the shot, but they had to build a partition to separate Jagger from the cat.
Like right? Indiana Jones from the snake.
Sure. Yeah. The glass, which you can see if you look closely, you can see the reflection of the snake.
Yeah.
So they had to build this partition. While they were building the partition, Watson says, hey, you know what? I've got an idea. Let's try something here. And he grabs his Hasselblad. And they do this in-camera double exposure, and he took a picture of the cat, and took a China marker, like a grease pencil, and drew on the focus screen where the eyes, where the nose, where the mouth was.
Yep.
Brought Jagger over, matched him up, rewound the film, clicked it again. They took 12 shots, 4 of them matched up. And the one that has become the iconic shot was one of those shots. But he said there's no post-processing on it at all. It's yep. It's as you see it was as it came out of the camera.
Yep.
And it was just such a, it was two things. It was such a matter-of-fact glimpse into an artist at work. Just, oh, well, let's try this. And let's try this. Oh, and now we have this thing, this result, this picture, you know?
Right.
And it was fascinating. And he cited several examples of that, where he kept coming back to this idea of always be looking, always be looking at form, looking at shadow and light, looking at color, looking at texture. And the implication was that yes, great photos can happen by accident, but you have to be willing to receive the accident. Yeah, you know, what's the Picasso quote?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got to find you working or whatever.
Yeah, inspiration is everywhere. It just has to find you working.
Yeah.
It was fascinating. No, all that to say, it was fascinating to hear him speak and see somebody so at the top of his game still, but so humble about his process. And there are no secrets. You can ask me anything. I love doing this.
There, I have found many of the pictures that I really like are ones that I saw while doing something else during the shoot, right? Like you were saying, where I'm shooting somebody from one angle and I go over to move some light and I go, oh, wait a minute, this is way better over here. You know, you do a test shot to make sure the light is the way you want it to be from another angle and you go, oh, this is a better angle anyway. See how that's hitting them. It is funny how many times, sometimes I wonder if the best artists are better at realizing what is going to be the answer and having less of those moments where you have an idea, you try to execute the idea isn't right, but it leads you to another idea. Did you fail at the first idea, or was the first idea just a stepping stone to get to the actual thing?
Yeah.
You
know? Just the vehicle. Yeah.
Right. And is there an element of, well, the more you can actually have your initial idea be the final result, is that are you graded higher? You know what I mean? Like, are you doing a better job if you can pre-visualize more accurately? And for a while I kind of beat myself up over that.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
Can you pre-visualize?
You know, cause I mean, that's a big part of it.
Sure.
You know, I have this idea for this thing and I'm going to put this girl in this blah, blah, blah and make this, you know, and then you get there and you go, that doesn't really work. Or you do it and you're trying to sell yourself in the fact that it's working or it's not working. You know, like, oh yeah, that looks how I wanted, even though how you wanted might be the wrong answer, you know, because you only had it in your head. You didn't have it in front of your eyes and things change then, you know? So yeah, it's I found the video. I put it in there. I haven't watched the whole thing yet either, so I will.
Yeah, it's terrific. Oh, and Hugh came out, and also Peter Geyser and one of the 42 Connors brothers.
Nice.
Yeah, John came out. How many are there? I don't even know. Are there six?
Here's the thing. I don't know that anyone is supposed to know. I don't even know if they know. Right? Like, I think it's one of those things where it's like, the less you know, the less you ask, the more you know.
All right. But it was terrific to see them. I ate something before. My stomach wasn't feeling very well, so I couldn't meet up with them for a meal or a beer or something. But I would love a rain check, guys.
What did you eat? I don't want to know.
Yeah, In-N-Out burger that made me sick. All right. Yeah.
Where do you want to go? You want to talk about street photography?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So street photography, good stuff.
So elevating
what's our next
work.
Topic?
So yeah, right. Separating kind of good and great street photography. I think we're going to agree on some of this and disagree on some of this. And I think some of these things will apply to all genres of photography.
Yeah. Although I do believe that, well, no, all photography has all different genres of photography. And even if you can create, I mean, they all blend into each other, obviously. Right. But if you can separate them into buckets in a very Victorian way, I think street photography has things that are very specific to it. Let's start there.
What is specific to street photography or unique to street photography that maybe doesn't rear its head in other genres?
Well, I think first of all, I mean, other than it being on the street, whatever that means, I think that there's a less of a tight description of, you know, it's not a portrait because there aren't necessarily people in it, but maybe there are. I think that it is a more nebulous by design in the sense that it could be anything that your camera sees while you're walking around.
So are street portraits not street photography? Do those leave street photography and enter the realm of portraiture exclusively?
I have a very tight description of portraiture. To me, portraiture requires the subject to be involved. So if you're taking a picture of somebody who doesn't realize you're taking their picture, to me, that could be a picture of a person and it could be an amazing picture of a person, but I wouldn't necessarily consider it a portrait myself. But that's just my weird definition of it. So if you're talking about that, sure. But I mean, okay. What about the William, what's his name, picture of the kid where with the two kids with the one kid with the gun pointing it at the camera? You know what I'm talking about, the old black and white one. Two kids and one of them's like he's got a cowboy gun and he's like pointing it at the camera.
Okay. So what's the question?
Like those kids obviously know they're getting their picture taken. I would tend to think of that not as a portrait of those kids, but as a street photograph of kids on the street. Even though the kids are involved for some reason, you know, there's like a separation. It's that guy, whoever, well, it's a guy in this case, that guy took that picture of a situation that was kind of happening. And yeah, maybe they were mugging for the camera, but he was an observer of the street, not a creator of the street. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that most of the pictures, especially ones that don't very strongly involve a single individual or that kind of thing on street photography, to me, it ends up being a lot about composition becomes doubly important, you know, or some sort of structure to the image that kind of gives it a character, a fingerprint, is something that I think is what separates good from great. You know, there's a lot of street photography out there.
There is.
The ones you remember are generally, every picture is unique, right?
Right, right. So but, is Eggleston a street photographer?
To me, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about Shore? People like that. Even Bresson. I mean, of course,
you know,
Bresson, right?
People like Stephen Shore fall into that weird thing where it's almost urban landscape rather than street photography, you know?
Or DeCorsia.
Yeah, yeah, or yeah, exactly. Or, yeah. But, yeah, and I guess, I mean, in some ways, Bresson was. I mean, he's walking around Paris taking those pictures, you know? Do you think street photography sort of started with small cameras? Do you think it requires?
I don't think it requires small cameras, but I certainly think that small cameras can be a benefit, an enormous benefit, especially if you're trying to go unnoticed. I mean, look, there's the classic sort of Bruce Gilden, you know, flash in one hand, camera in the other, in your face mode of street portraits and street photography.
Yeah. Yep.
But then there are also those people who want to blend in. And I think part of that can be
like a Joel Meyerowitz thing.
Sure. But even Vivian Mayer, you know, seemed to blend into her surroundings and she was using 2.25. So I don't know that it's dependent on hardware, a dependency on small cameras.
Well, I think you and I have mentioned a number of times, I think successful street photographers, not always, many successful street photographers are very good at being unnoticed.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't necessarily, I feel very self-conscious when I'm trying to be unnoticed. And therefore that makes me noticeable. You know, right. I'm not good at it.
I think it can go either way. You know, I have gotten in in my opinion, some terrific photographs where people knew I was taking their photo and they were okay with it because I asked, you know, I rarely take someone's photograph where that person is the main subject of a photograph without asking permission.
Right. Okay. Fair enough. But, I mean, there's a little bit of a Heisenberg's uncertainty principle there, right? Where if the person knows they're getting their photo taken, it changes the photo. You ever go up to somebody afterwards and say, "Hey, you know, you looked really interesting sitting on the bench with your legs that way. I just want to let you know I just took your photograph." Would you ever do
that? I don't know. I would do that. I don't know that I don't remember ever having done it. I typically would ask for permission.
Okay. Moments on the street, especially, I feel are very, very fragile.
Yeah, sure. Right? Sure.
The minute you go talk to the guy or the woman sitting on the bench, to me, most of the time in that interaction, something got lost. And I'm not saying you can't take a great picture after that, but a lot of times The reason why you wanted to take that picture in the first place is no longer there when you step back.
Yeah, it can. Sure. I mean, and sometimes it doesn't have to be an actual conversation. Sometimes you can, you know, it's the, when you're in the restaurant, you've got the check, please sign, you know, the little check mark in the air, yep. You know, sometimes you can kind of,
snap,
you know,
snap.
A nod and, you know, snappy, hold the snappy. Camera up. You know, in 2012, I was at Paris Photo in LA on the Paramount lot. Mm-hmm. And, happened to run into Ibarrionex Perello and his lovely wife. Hi, Ibarrionex. And it was funny because they were, you know, I asked him how they were enjoying the show, walking around. He's like, "Oh yeah, you know, it's great. I'm so glad I got to see the Herzogs." And that kind of, I was like, who are the Herzogs? I was thinking like some friends of his. I'm glad we ran into the Herzogs. And I had no idea who Fred Herzog was until, you know, going into the soundstage and seeing these incredible street photographs, yep. Some of just the surrounding buildings and architecture, but many of them have people in them. And though many of those shots with people in them, the people obviously are aware that their photograph is being taken. So why are they great? Why did those strike me so deeply compared to any number of pictures we see on Flickr or 500 Pics or
right? Although not that there aren't some amazing things on Flickr or 500 Pics.
No, there
Pics,
absolutely
right?
are. There and absolutely
that's,
are.
That's the hard part. I mean, is greatness in photography like pornography? You know it when you see it. If you gave 100 random street photos to 100 different people, not the same 100 people who took the pictures, but you know, you gave it, we pull out 100 pictures and we put them in a gallery and we let our thousands of listeners look at them and rate them saying sure. Which 10 are the best, you know, which
you're
one,
gonna, you're
which
probably
going to
get, you're probably going to get a bunch of different spikes
yeah,
in I terms wonder, of what's number one, what's not the top five will probably be, similar. But those next ones might be all over the map.
So there is, getting back to the Bursig thing, inherent quality to stuff in some level, right? Because if there wasn't, then you would get a smattering all over the map of nothing that correlated with each other. So enough people think that certain things are better than others that there must be something inherent in the pictures, and it's not just purely subjective rendering of thought on it, you know?
Yeah, and again, that's kind of the rub.
Even though there will probably be 10% of the people who disagree with all of the top 10 that the other 90 came up with.
Right. Right.
There will always be a minority report. You know?
Yeah. You know, I asked part of the book, my book is talking to, as you might imagine, talking to other photographers. And one of the questions was around what's the most unappreciated skill of a street photographer, because I think a lot of people look at street photography and downplay it as into the realm of snapshots.
Well, I think that there are snapshots that people talk about as if they are street photography that are just snapshots.
Okay, but that's the crux of the discussion, though, isn't it? What separates, you know, not to borrow like a Kelby-esque marketing term, but what separates a snapshot from a great shot?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's that elusive thing. You know, it's sort of like, you know,
what's your probability?
Yeah. What's your favorite Beatles song? Well, yeah. Okay, you're gonna get 100 different answers.
Yeah.
I think for me, it goes back to that sense of ambiguity in part. The sense that I could look at this photograph over and over and over again and not get tired of looking at it or tired of talking about why I like it or what it is I like about it or just the joy that I feel in looking at it.
You know, maybe part of it is, you know, how I was saying how if you go talk to the guy, the moment's gone. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm looking at some Fred Herzog stuff because you mentioned it. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at these
it's
pictures.
Great, right?
Oh yeah, they're fantastic. I mean, I'm a fan, but there's one picture here of I'll put it in the show.
All right, where are you at?
I'll put it in the show notes and then I'll add it to the actual show notes. This okay. picture here, this American Suburbs picture. It's this picture of all these blue and red and green wooden buildings on this street in some, you know, no name town in the Midwest or something, right? It looks like that kind of thing. And there's these yep. two kids playing in the street, all a bunch kind of kids playing in the street, yep. two yep. kids in the foreground wrestling. What to me makes this picture, it's not getting to me, but like this is why it sticks with me is that I feel like this was a moment he was there. He shot this picture. And if I went to that same street, I would never see this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's true for me in most street photography that I really enjoy, whether it's our old favorite Saul Leiter or this guy or any of the guys from the 70s that we talk about or any of the modern guys in Japan and in New York and in LA, that yeah. if I went to that street corner, it wouldn't be there. That moment wouldn't be there when I got there. Some other moment no. might be there, but the fact is that it's not just something that I observed where it's like, oh, that's a nice door and nice curtains necessarily. There needs to be something else to it to me, like an element. There's a picture of his a little further down of, speaking of red doors and curtains, put another one in the show notes here. Red doors and there's a red door and there's curtains and there's a guy or a woman's arm kind of holding the curtain open on the back of a sofa mm-hmm. inside. And all you can see is the arm. If I went back there, that person probably wouldn't be there and those curtains would just be hanging. Right.
It's but like, wouldn't that be interesting? Maybe there's something else there.
Yeah. No. Maybe there would be something else there. But my point is that what I'm seeing in this picture wouldn't be there. And that like gives it an element of, an element of timelessness and immediacy at the same time. Sort of this like, oh,
I get that.
We threw this thing in a bottle. It's like lightning
right,
in a bottle.
Right. You could take the other position though.
Go ahead.
Looking at the previous picture, the two kids wrestling
yep.
in the street, look down in the mid background
yep.
where the other people are. Nobody is paying attention to them at all. Which
True.
Tells me that this is a fairly common occurrence.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That this is so the idea that either these boys or some other boys are going to be doing something, maybe not this exact gesture, not exact pose, but this it strikes me that this happens a lot because nobody's paying any attention.
Yeah, it's just kids being rabble-rousing kids. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. it's also I mean, especially in this kind of, in this case, there's a history to it, right? Where this street does not look like this anymore. Even if those buildings are still there, they're in far worse disrepair, or half of them are torn down.
Sure.
You know, that kind of thing. Right. So there's sort of a, this gives you a glimpse into the past that you couldn't get otherwise. I feel like that great street photography to me needs something more than just inanimate objects on the street, unless something needs to be out of place. Maybe that's what it is. Right.
Hmm.
Yes, it's just a staircase up into the subway, but there's a discarded doll that some girl dropped or something like that sitting on the stairs. Right. Without the doll, the picture's not interesting. With the doll, the picture's interesting. It needs that something to make it different. And maybe that's the case with all great photographs, where something, it's like there needs to be some element of it that catches you off guard, at least in some cognitive dissonance way, you know, where you take a second look, you do a double take.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm just throwing out ideas. I'm just looking at these things, trying to figure out what it is that makes me care about them.
I don't know that it has to be that specific for me. I mean, I think it's something that I keep responding to, that I keep, every time I see it, it's sort of like a great film. You know, if one of my favorite movies comes on, chances are I'll sit down and watch at least some of it, sometimes all of it.
Okay.
Depending on where it's at.
Yep.
And I think for me, great photography does the same thing. Great street photography in particular either reminds me of a time and place, or inspires in me a memory of a time and place that I had yet to or never have experienced.
Right. Like it kind of time travels you to that moment where you feel like you're viewing something you wouldn't have been able to view.
Right. Right. There's a picture here. Let me paste this in. It's another Herzog picture of two men in silhouette, one walking toward the camera, one walking away from the camera, both in long coats and fedoras in this hazy street.
Okay.
I like the composition of it. I like the fact that one is coming towards us, one is moving away from us. I love the slight motion blur of the car rounding the corner. But it more than that, it evokes a time and place that I have romanticized because it was before my time and place.
Yeah, and 1958, that wasn't 58. A time and place?
1858.
No, I get that. Yeah, absolutely.
But I get the same feeling from looking at, you know, Cochi Hernandez or Rinzi Ruiz,
right,
or, you know, Daido Moriyama, you know, or Christopher Matheson, or, you know,
is that a matter of that the person who's taking the pictures is noticing something you would not have noticed? Like maybe a certain amount of,
well, and I'll go you one better,
but yeah, go ahead.
Not only maybe that I wouldn't have noticed, but that I wish I would have.
Yeah,
because
sure.
It's an aspiration game.
I wish, right? I was that observant, or
yeah,
I wish
photography
that I, yeah,
is an aspiration game. I aspire to see what you've seen. I aspire to be more aware of my surroundings and see that light changing and see that person stepping off the curb and catching them in sharp focus, but their front leg in slight blur, you know, whatever it is.
Sure, sure.
But
okay, the same picture, yeah, you're looking at though, the guy's walking. If that was a modern picture and it was a Toyota Tercel on the left and, you know, guys in shorts and jeans walking back and forth from 2 days ago, would that be interesting to you, or is it because of the time?
Oh, I think the time certainly plays into it.
Yeah.
But it could be interesting as well. Again, there is a timelessness to older work,
yep,
but there is also a timeliness to newer work.
Yep.
And I think each of those points of view are valid.
You know, it's funny. I think as we talk about this, I think part of my not dislike, because it's not that I don't dislike it, but my personal ambivalence towards a lot of street photography, and certainly not the stuff that you and I both agree is great, but sort of the whole idea of street photography is something that I want to look at in my Flickr feed or Instagram feed all day long, is that it is hard to define what is good. And therefore that's intellectually frustrating to me when trying to decide whether I like something or not. Like my inability to define it makes it difficult for me to accept it. Yeah, right.
I can see that. Because, well, look, you're predominantly, you know, your body of work is predominantly very controlled.
Yep.
Very specific.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't like necessarily
casting
tried
nets.
It. Yeah. Yep. And I get that. Whereas I am, I'm a fan of letting the tool do the job and just being concerned with what it sees.
Right. Yeah.
Or what I see through it, I guess, is the better.
Most of the time that I bring a camera out in the street, I come home with what I feel is uninteresting, mundane images.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's a failure of my vision. Maybe it's a failure of my locale, although I live in New York City. I doubt it's my locale. But there, or a frustration that I'm not getting something that feels, and maybe it's just a time thing. I mean, how many of our friends who are street photographers? I mean, it is a low winner, right? Your batting average is pretty low, even if you're really great. It's shooting a lot and finding the pearls to polish, you know?
Yeah, but I think that. You know, you said something just a minute ago about, you know, New York. There's no shortage of... I almost think that New York can work against you.
Because there's so much stuff already.
Because, yeah, we've seen New York for decades.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. Try to come up with something different that somebody else hasn't seen in New York.
Right.
Yep, sure. Yeah, it's part of it.
You know, I mean, oh, great, a shot of the bridge. That's, you know, it's sort of sure. The same thing with San Francisco.
Yep. Yep.
You know? There's another guy who, I don't know how to pronounce his name. Thomas Luthard. Is that how you pronounce his name? I think.
I don't know. Let me see.
Luthard. He's another person I follow. A lot of his work, and Jason Peterson is another one. Look up Jason Peterson, Chicago photographer. Thomas uses silhouette.
He's a street photographer guy, right? Yeah.
Thomas uses silhouette to great effect.
Yep.
And, like some other people that we've both mentioned and you know that I have been following lately, he uses a lot of negative space, and these devices, gosh, what would you call them? They're not rules, guidelines,
yeah,
principles, whatever. In talking to people, I find that they appeal, and they are both appealing and unappealing in nearly equal measure. Yep. To people. You know, a lot of people don't like empty space.
Yep. Yeah. Well, you know, I'm looking at this Thomas Luthard's pictures, right?
Yep.
And a lot of them are amazing.
Yeah.
However, I don't know that I would necessarily pick out his images from a lot of other amazing images of a similar style.
Okay.
You know, we were looking at the Fred Herzogger, you're looking at all the guys and gals we just talked about. I feel like most of them, I think street photography is one of the most difficult places to come up with a style that has your fingerprint on it beyond just, oh yes, he's using negative space. Yes. He's using, you know, rule of thirds, circles, stripes, contrasts, you know, all those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. I think it's the hardest place to make something that is, you know, that guy's work is really, really good, but it doesn't
feel that way about portraiture.
Oh, portraiture is absolutely that way. But I think in street photography, it's almost even harder because you have so much less control over what's in front of your camera other than positioning yourself. You know, it's all about where you and the camera are and when you, you know, when you choose to press the button. You have a lot less control because it's not, in many ways, it's entirely about your decisions while the river of time is flowing past you, you know, no one's working with you, you know. I don't know. The amount of people who I see who put up amazing stuff. There's so many great photographers on Instagram. But I don't know how many of them I would look at a collection of theirs and remember it other than seeing a bunch of really great photographs in a row. You know, and I'm not trying to be judgy. I'm honestly just sort of, it's like, it's hard for me to define what it is that makes me come back, you know?
What it is that makes you come back to the body of work?
Yeah. What, you know, other than looking at a picture going, oh, that's a neat picture. Like, look at that, you know, great silhouette. I wish I had seen that. But I don't come back to that stuff the same way I come back to a lot of the Egglestons and Herzogs and Leiters of the world, you know?
I tend to feel that way about... Buckle up. I tend to feel that way about Cartier-Bresson. I mean,
yeah.
I look at his work and I, you know, it's like, oh, okay.
Buckle up.
Yeah. I mean, there are certainly some standouts that I find.
Yeah. There are 30 to 50 pictures that are really, you know, the bicyclists underneath the crazy curving staircase shot, like those kinds of moments that are like, yeah, okay, that's a
nice,
really
shot.
Lovely shot. Yeah.
It's a nice shot.
You also got to take into account when that was. I mean, he was shooting in the 30s, right? He was one of the guys who came up with that style, you know? But yeah, I mean, I like Bresson. I'm not one of those people who looks at Bresson as the end all be all.
Right.
So yeah, I'm with you there. Yeah. It's a tricky thing. Okay. Here's one last element of this.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Color versus black and white street photography.
Oh, you know, that's a, that's an interesting one because, you know, there are certain people, there are certain photographers with whom you associate black and white or color.
Yep.
For a long time, you know, again, to bring up Leiter, for a long time, I had never seen any of his black and white.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people hadn't until that other book came out.
Yeah. And then I got that book and, you know, started looking at it. I started looking beforehand, but then I got the book and really saw an incredible body of work that exists, in my opinion, every bit as much alongside the color work.
Yeah. It's definitely not it's not tragically different from the color work. You know, it has a different feel, but it's still definitely him, you know, I think color street photography is probably harder than black and white.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that because color, the nature of color can be such a distraction.
Yeah. And something, another uncontrollable thing. If everything structurally is amazing in the picture, but the awning is a terrible color of fuchsia. You know, there's not much you can do about it.
Not much you can do about it unless you go in and change it in post. But, you know, then you get into a whole ethical discussion.
That's a whole other thing. Yep.
Yeah. It's that's an interesting one because there are some photographers, both older and contemporary, who I started looking at one body of work and then was introduced to another. I either started in black and white and then found their color work or vice versa. And I think you have to take it on a case by case basis. As you just said, I think that there are photographs that lend themselves to one or the other.
Yeah. Yep. I think I'm drawn far more to color street work than black and white street work. Black and White Street Work has a romance to it sometimes that I feel tends to be schmaltzy when it's overused. Like it's overly romantic, you know, it's using the black and white. It's using monochrome as a spice, not as a limitation.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did we use Shin Noguchi a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, I do believe we did. Yeah.
That's a terrific example. His work is a terrific example of color street photography that works really well, in my opinion.
Yep.
To go back to Moriyama, I think Moriyama's work, his color work and his black and white work, they feel different to me. They almost feel like they could be different photographers. But then when you look at them side by side, you go, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Like if you saw each body of work in sort of disparate museums, I think you would like and appreciate them both as maybe unique individuals, but then you see it together and it all works.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. You know, it's defining good and great on all of these things. And we'll talk about some more, I think some more genres in the next few weeks. It's a very difficult place to go. I mean, I think that the reasons why I feel like you and I and some other people may end up at the same place, general place within 100 pictures, like we were talking about, right? But we may do it for different reasons.
Yeah, I think that's probably close. You know, and then there are, you know, you get into degrees of black and white, degrees of color,
sure,
high contrast, low contrast, you know, film types, vibrant, sure, you know, that sure kind of thing. But in general, again, I want a photograph that I can keep coming back to.
Yep.
That I don't. It's like watching Fight Club, you know, for a long time. Every time I watched Fight Club, I saw something different that I didn't see before, or I caught a little line that zipped past me the first time.
Right, you sure know?
And I think a great photograph, whether it's street or landscape or you know, anything else, first of all, you're going to have a genre that you're drawn to. I am not really drawn to landscape photography.
Right, sure.
I would make a distinction between landscape and wildlife photography.
Okay, yep, I would.
You know, something like Nick Brandt's work, I wouldn't consider that landscape. I would definitely consider that wildlife. And that, for me, is something different.
Yep. And in his case, a very distinctive take on wildlife photography.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, sure.
It's not just a 400-millimeter lens with a cannon in the back of a truck.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. It's very, yeah, very, yeah, yeah, yep, very unique.
Go ahead.
But street, I think part of why street photography would appeal or not appeal to someone is where you are.
Yeah.
You know, I, in talking to Nick, he's not a big fan of street photography because he's not a big fan of cities.
Right.
Yep. So I think you have to first, either enjoy or at least be able to appreciate where those pictures are taken. And then you can get into degrees of why they might appeal to you. But if you can't stand cities to begin with, then
it's not going to be the right place for you.
It's not going to be a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I guess that gets down to whether you like people or not to some extent.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Man, lots to talk about in that one. That's a
podcast it on Taking Pictures.
What else do you want to get into today? I think we should save the Justice Pang thing for next week. I think we went over the top with time.
Okay. I caught something. You watch Vice? You Vice?
Is that a TV network or a online version?
Well, it's Viceland. Viceland.com.
I do not watch Viceland.com.
Okay. So, Viceland.com. There's a show on there called Abandoned.
Okay.
And I think I want to say that it's isn't it part of the Vice Network?
Could
it's got to be, right?
It's probably, yeah.
Anyway, there's a show called Abandoned that's hosted by a guy named Rick McCrank, who's a skateboarder. And they go to different places that have been abandoned, as the title may suggest, and talk about the landscape and what happened and why they're abandoned. And for those of you who like this type of thing, like the abandoned hospitals and movie theaters and, you know, that kind of thing. It's a fascinating series, and I've only seen a couple of them. I watched one on shopping malls, which is kind of interesting because they go into the history of the shopping mall and when it came to be and why it came to be and some of the socioeconomic issues that have caused their demise.
Okay.
And I guess at one point there were 1,200 some odd shopping malls around the country, and then they started to go away because there were too many of them. And the area of the country that they focus on in this episode is Ohio, which apparently had, you know, sort of more shopping malls per
capita.
Yeah. And it's a fascinating look at not only what happens when humans leave a place,
yep,
but it's kind of a fascinating commentary on, in some cases, capitalism, in some cases, you know, sort of just human effect on the natural world.
Sure. Yep.
So you might want to check that out.
I'm looking at the episodes now. You know, there was a mall when I was growing up in Waterbury, Connecticut, called the Naugatuck Valley Mall. And if anybody is from Connecticut who's listening and knows about the Naugatuck Valley Mall or remembers it, chime in, send us an email. That I remember going to with my mother. I remember the smell of the place. I remember the fountain you threw coins into. I remember the friendlies in there with the counter that I used to sit at with my mother and eat grilled cheese, like when we went shopping when I was 5 or 6 years old or whatever. And years later, there are all these websites online where people went into these malls when they're abandoned, like this guy did, and took pictures of the inside of this mall that I remembered a certain way, circa 1979 or 1980. And it's just decrepit. And looking at abandoned stuff like this doesn't make me feel good. It makes me feel creepy and sad. You know, did you ever watch? Oh, you were never a Doctor Who fan. Anyway, there's an episode of Doctor Who called Blink, which a lot of people doesn't really have a lot of the Doctor in it. It's just like a weird time travel story. And a lot of people point to it. It won all kinds of awards. It's like the best sci-fi episode of the year and blah, 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 blah. It was a big deal. I'll send you a link. It's pretty good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, in this episode, the character who's played by Carey Mulligan, is that the actress? Beautiful.
Was she in Felicity?
No.
Oh, Carey,
no.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Kind of waifish.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So that was, if she was in this episode.
Skin like porcelain.
Right. Kind of she's thing? The star yeah, of yeah. this episode before she became a big star. Right. And she's in this episode and she's hanging out in this old decrepit building. And her friend comes over and is just like, what are you doing here? This is sad. And she said something along the lines of sad is happy for deep people or something like that.
Nice.
I always think about that line. Nice. And so I think that there's certain people who sort of get off on that feeling. To me, it just still makes me feel sad, but I'm gonna have to check this out. This looks actually pretty interesting. And it's interesting, the idea of having a guy who riding around on a skateboard or a bike, showing these things off, you know. I wonder who came up with this idea. What a strange idea.
Right.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah, good idea. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah. So take a look at it. Yeah. You think we're good?
I think we're good. Let's go on to the other stuff.
Right. To the group.
Yeah. I'm seeing if there's if that link actually exists. If that's the line. Yeah. Happy for deep people. She says. Where's the line? Here's. Why did you come here for anyway? And she said, I like old things. They make me feel sad. And the other girl says, what's good about sad? And she said, it's happy for deep people.
Yeah. Nice.
Let's go to the group.
We're running a little late on time. You want to do these crit wall things next week, or do you want to do?
Yeah, let's do crit wall next week. We'll do stuff for next week.
Okay, so crit wall next week. Get them in to the group.
Yep.
At the on taking pictures.
Did you want to say something about Leonard Cohen before we finished up?
Just that it, you know, suck it 2016. That's all.
Yeah. I watched. Did you ever watch that documentary about Leonard Cohen? Where all these people hear him. It's a docu. What's her name made me watch it? I'm Your Man. Did you watch this one?
Yeah.
It's very odd.
It's strange. Yeah, it's a strange doc.
So it's you know, it's people, interviews with him, and then people coming and singing. Is this the one? Is this the one we're talking about, right? Where it's a... Rufus Wainwright and a bunch of other people coming out and singing his songs. It's actually, I found a copy on YouTube, so I'll throw that in the show notes too. But very interesting hearing him talk about moments in his own life and then hearing people sing his songs. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, becoming a monk, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then deciding...
Rufus just played a show in, I want to say Arizona, I think on Wednesday or Thursday night, and ended up playing Hallelujah. Didn't plan on it. Said he didn't plan on playing it, but he played a piano version of Hallelujah.
You like him?
Rufus Wainwright?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Love Rufus Wainwright.
I give him
years and years.
I really like him. I think he's a very talented guy. Good in small doses. After a few songs, I'm like, okay, I can't. The voice gets to me after a while. I do, however, think that his Gap ad back in the day was like the best Gap ad ever.
Nice.
Singing What Do You Do on New Year's Eve?
Right.
Yeah.
I still think his first, for me, I still think his first record is his best record.
Okay.
There are just so many terrific songs on that record. But yeah, talented fellow. Really talented fellow.
Talented family. Yeah.
You know,
I put the Gap ad in the show notes if anybody wants to watch it. Where he does What Are You Doing New Year's Eve. I love that
right
too.
Okay.
What else you got? So where are we going?
So what was the last one? It was civic
duty,
which a lot of people did not use civic duty but posted terrific shots nonetheless. some really that Edward De La Torre that we might have talked about that last time, the shot of the artichokes and the, is that artichoke?
I don't know. Did we see the artichoke one? I don't remember.
Oh, you know
one.
What? That was, you know, I'm still in the crit wall area.
Oh, see, that's, there's your problem.
Duh. Okay. All right. Yep. So, oh, here they all are. Yeah. Yeah. There was one that really stuck out for me.
Millie's picture outside of Leonard Cohen's house is really sad.
Oh, John Jennings, Oak Creek Canyon. So many terrific memories of Oak Creek Canyon growing up. We used to go there a lot. And
Where's
when
Oak
the leaves,
Creek Canyon?
Just outside of Sedona in Arizona. And it's this beautiful red rocked canyon that's filled with trees. And about this time of year, when the leaves change, it is absolutely stunning. I mean, it doesn't get much prettier than that. It's a beautiful, beautiful place. So, a terrific shot, John. I love this, it's a framed shot, but Mike Waller, is it a truck or a car? It's a window of something. I like that. I like, you can still see the seat, with the contrasting kind of piping. It's terrific.
Yeah. Yeah. I like, Don Jackson's image of the marching band.
Yep. That's not nice. Okay. Shot. Now this brings up, an interesting discussion from previous. Would this work as well in color?
Yeah. Good question. Depends.
Again,
on the
I
color
think it depends on what their uniforms are, doesn't it?
Yep. Yep.
But I love that gradient sky you've got going down there, John. That's terrific. I love seeing the reflection in this. Is that one? That's a sousaphone, right? Yeah.
That would be a sousaphone. Yes.
Yeah.
What's see the picture that Winslow put up a little while ago of the Statue of Liberty? Wonder where he shot that from. I wonder if he shot
the
it
water.
From the Well, obviously, yes. But the Staten Island Ferry, maybe?
Call yourself a photographer.
Call yourself a New Yorker. You don't even know where the hell it is.
I told you
about the story about the Statue of Liberty on the subway. Did I ever tell that story on the show?
I don't know if you told it on the show.
Years ago. 12, 15 years ago. It was summertime. It was hot. And the train near my house comes up above ground for two stops. And it goes up this long hill. And we were on a train where the air conditioning wasn't working well, and it was hot, and everyone was miserable, and it was rush hour. And the train stops on the hill going up to the stop, and everyone's like, everyone sighs, like, oh, great, it's going to take forever to get home. And just as everyone's despondent and about to, like, start beating each other up, the announcer comes over the intercom, and he says, "Ladies and gentlemen, please look out the right side of the train. See our majestic lady, the Statue of Liberty."
Nice.
And, you know, 3 miles.
See our majestic lady. That's awesome.
Yeah, and you look 3 miles out to the east, or to the west, to our right, which is to the west, is the Statue of Liberty out there. I mean, it's not like right there. It's a few miles away, but it's, you know, you can see it. And everyone just instantly, everyone looked out the window and everyone kind of smiled and we're just like, yeah, all right, we can deal with the heat. You know what I mean? Like, look where we are, you know? Right.
Our majestic lady. I love that.
So whenever I go by there, I'm like, ladies and gentlemen, please look out the right side of the train.
Love it.
It's good stuff. Anyway,
our majestic lady, the Statue of Liberty.
So what do you want to do for next week?
So not a lot of stuff. I mean, civic duty, that's kind of a tough one.
It is a tough one. I was trying to give him a challenge.
That's a tough one. Some good stuff otherwise, though. I got to tell you, Michael Atanzio, from Out of the Ordinary, not often do you see a guy pushing a sewing machine up a major thoroughfare.
Shows how much you know about reality.
Right. I keep my sewing machine where it belongs.
Yeah. I want one of those old Singers. Those are cool.
I don't know. What is that? That looks more like a Bernina. What is that? He says,
nerd. It's the worst kind of nerd, a sewing nerd. All right, so what do you got?
What are you going to do? What do you think? I'm having a tough time.
The second one might be a little too... I think your original one was better than both of those.
Hope? Yeah. I think we've already done it, though.
Oh, we did? Okay.
I asked the girl on the way to taking her to school, I said, we need an assignment. What do you think about an assignment for this week?
She said,
how about downfall? She's 10.
Ding. She's like, you're all going to be dead. I'm the one who's going to be frying.
Right. I said, what about congestion? People could take pictures of cars or people. And she's like, or their noses.
Then that's perfect. Congestion it is.
Congestion. How about congestion?
Okay.
Courtesy of Sylvia.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Because I was in DC yesterday, I got to hang out with my niece and nephew.
Right.
And my niece Agnes is, you know, blind and I get there and I sit down and I was telling you the story the other day and she like taps my leg and she goes, "Whose leg is this?" And I said, "Uncle Billy's." She goes, "Uncle Billy is here?"
Right.
Like totally surprised. So the next day I sit with her for like 2 hours and we're like having these little discussions and we're whispering to each other because like it's fun to go, Agnes. And she goes, "What?" You know, and you play like the stuff you do with kids. And we have this like really deep thing. And I'm like, "Agnes, I love you so much. Like I'll always love you." And she's like, "Always, forever?" And it's like, you know, like these like really deep things that almost make you cry as an adult when you're dealing with little kids.
Sure, sure.
And so I leave and I said to my mother, have they forgotten about me yet? And she's like, yeah. And my mother sends me this video and she goes to Agnes. She goes, "Hey Agnes, did you have fun with Uncle Billy?" And she goes, "Who?"
Right. You're like, I could have been anybody. Why do I bother?
Exactly. That's pretty genius. Anyway, congestion. Let's do it.
Congestion. Yeah.
Hey, photographer of the week. I went with some a contemporary woman that I found the other day, which I think is really kind of cool. Vicky Da Silva, who is she considers herself a light graffiti photographer, where it's sort of like light painting, but she's drawing sort of graffiti in front of real places and real pictures. mm-hmm. which I think is actually a really neat thing to do. And some of these rooms are pretty crazy. Have you looked at some of these pictures?
I have. I'll be honest with you. A little of this goes a real long way for
me. Oh, yeah. You couldn't do this all the time, but I think it's a neat idea. I look at some of the ones, the exterior ones, where it's like sheets of light.
Yeah, almost like
how
where
do you
you've
think
got
she's
like
doing that?
Maybe like LED,
a long bulb, like
a long LED strip. Yeah,
it's pretty cool though. It's
like those ice lights that Jerry Giannis hawks.
So she's basically making sort of flowing curtains of fabric looking things out of light.
Yeah,
which I think are actually really, really beautiful.
I think those are much more interesting than
the writing ones.
The writing, the writing. Like I said, a little of that goes an awfully long way for me. If you scroll down on these curtains, look at the tartans that she does with the different colors.
Yeah, yeah. I was looking at those too just now and thinking, how the heck does she do that?
Oh, okay, and down the bottom you can see some of the instruments.
Oh, yeah, you can. Yep. So what are those things? Those are... What is
fascinating?
That? Oh,
though.
she's got them like on a thing so she can control them via wire or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really neat. Anyway, just think it's
interesting.
She's doing something different, you know?
Yeah. Again, the graffiti stuff.
See, I like the graffiti ones.
I do like the, there's one in interiors where they've got somebody coming down a stair and you can sort of see the silhouette.
Yeah.
Almost as a mask.
Behind the light. Yeah. I was just looking at that one myself.
That's pretty neat.
And I just like some people doing things where I go, I wouldn't have thought of that. That's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's some bunch of videos too.
Bunch of videos on how it kind of came together.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me to see this stuff come together.
It's hard to do light writing well.
Yeah.
To have it come out that clean is hard.
I am more fascinated with the process on this type of work than the outcome.
Okay.
By and large.
Fair enough. I do like in the light graffiti ones that you don't necessarily like. I like the ones down the bottom where it just gets crazy, like, you know, a bunch of people were tagging and just putting street signs and stuff.
Right.
Those get pretty crazy because you're just like, oh, wait a minute. That's exactly how it would look if a bunch of kids got in there with buckets of paint and were tagging all over the place, you know?
Right.
And I say buckets, I mean buckets of spray paint. You know what I mean? Like big things full of all different colors. I don't know. I like these. I thought it was something different. So Vicky De Silva is our photographer of the week. I will put a link in show notes. You can go check out the videos and her stuff. And I think that she is in, where is she? She moved to New York in 83. So she's been doing single frame time exposure photographs at night since 1980. That's a long time.
Yeah, it's a long time. Before this was the
before
thing
was
on Instagram.
And before it was easy.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder what is more difficult in terms of technique and process, the ribbons or the writing. I would think the ribbons would be much more dependent on consistency in terms of speed, because if you look at the density of those ribbons,
they're pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost as if they, you know what? This would be actually a fun experiment to do. To get a light and try to actually create a strip that's pretty even across it.
Mm-hmm.
And in the places where it does bunch up, it bunches up the way fabric would bunch up, you know?
Yeah.
I think that part is hard. Consistency is hard in that part. I think the writing is hard just to make things. I don't know if you've ever tried doing like light writing like that, just getting it to knowing where you were and where you're going.
Cause
you know, it's very difficult to get perfectly formed letters that way.
I did what's the Picasso thing where he drew the bull?
Yeah, exactly.
You're
yeah.
like, what?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. I could maybe pull off a happy face.
You know, during that ad shoot I did a month and a half ago, part of it, we needed to do like a light painting element and we decided to do the guy making the light painting and the light painting separate so that we could merge things together. So we didn't have to get it all in one shot because they were indecisive creatively on what they wanted the actual guy to be drawing. So we brought in an artist friend of ours, Gideon Kendall, who came in and got up there. And he's like a comic book illustrator guy. I mean, he's like, you know, really high-end children's books and that kind of stuff. And we gave him a light and turned the screen around so he could see the results that came up after the shutter closed 3-4 seconds later. And he, you know, at first he was doing it and he goes, oh, no, let me do that again. And the second time he does it, it's like perfect, you know, like because he just thinks in three dimensions that way because that's what he does all the time, essentially, you know. I think that comes down to just being a hell of an artist, you know. Anyway.
Right.
Anything else? Will we be here next week?
We will be here next week. I hope.
At least until January 20th, we'll be
here. You know,
here.
Next After week's a long way from now, so I don't know. Yeah, we will be. If you've got, you know, questions, comments, podcast at ontakingpictures.com, or if it's a personal comment, you probably have one or both of our, each of our emails.
Yep.
You can tweet us at Bill Wadman or Jeffrey Sidoris.
Do you give the phone number?
347-687-9411. Once again, that's 347-687-9411. Callers are standing by. Operators are standing by.
Yeah.
Somebody's standing by.
If you call in the next 15 minutes,
that's right.
You'll annoy both of us at the same time.
Yeah, and you know, I know that some of you get a little short fused when we talk about things other than photography, but this was a big thing in America and it impacts the rest of the world.
Sure.
So I thank you for allowing us a little bit of rope at the beginning of the show.
Yep.
Hopefully we didn't hang ourselves.
Yeah. Nice. Hey, that just a reminder that Tony Vaccaro documentary, I think, was on HBO last night. So I think it's available on HBO Go and now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try to get it this week and watch it. So if anybody else out there wants to watch it,
yeah, I'll try.
Eventually,
and give it a go.
Let's see if we can talk about it at some point. But let's see, because I think it's supposed to be pretty good. So
I think it'll be. See what I did there?
You'll give it a go.
I'll give it a go.
Yeah,
HBO Go.
I also like the idea that his name is Vaccaro, which I think means cowboy.
Isn't that Vaccaro? Or is it the same thing?
Is
it spelled differently?
Vaccaro.
Hey, speaking of cowboys.
Because vodka is cow, right?
Anybody watching Westworld and have theories, don't spoil it, but, you know, are you watching it at all? No.
The prostitutes are robots. Oh, wasn't I supposed to say that?
Thanks a lot, douche. And that's another show I can stop watching now. No.
proto Jurassic Park. That's the way I see that.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to, because it got renewed for a second season. I wonder if we will see Future World, or are they going to stick to the Westworld universe?
Yeah, well, it's just sort of a conceit to then work on the further thoughts of, you know, the idea of technology and AI and blah, blah, blah.
Not for this week, but for next week. I wouldn't mind touching on when someone makes it, when someone makes what they do look so easy. I'm watching this thing and there's a terrific cast. Ed Harris is great. But the standout is Anthony Hopkins, who is just, he's seamless. I mean, he's just seamless. I mean, there's nothing I don't believe about that character, his struggles,
he's a hell of an actor.
He's just, and so maybe we can talk a little bit about that when watching those for whom creativity seems effortless.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think it's part of it is that he seems effortless because he's been doing it forever and he's really good at it, you know, but that's a conversation.
Yeah.
Till next week.
All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. All be good to each other.
See you later.
See ya.
So long. Too many fools, it's plain to see something's wrong. As this way, say what you wanna say, though I know your words will lay you way.